Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I study psychology and evolutionary biology, and I know that a lot has been going on the past few weeks, and we're all probably pretty brain fried, but one thing I've thought of is that we've probably missed a lot of animal news because of all the other news, which we aren't going to talk about today. We're going to talk about animal news and all the news that is fit to print in audio form because this is a podcast. Anyways, so I'm going to go through all the incredible animal news stories that you may have missed these past few weeks. We're talking robotic wolves, bear blade runner, newly discovered flying teddy bears. Discover this more as we answer the age-old question, what's a platypus rave like? Is it awesome? It is. Spoilers, it is awesome. Joining me today is host of the podcast, secretly incredibly fascinating, and friend of the pod, I'd like to say. I hope I'm not, you know, just
say
assuming
it.
Too much.
Say
friend,
it,
of, friend of the pod?
Yeah.
Friend of the pod, Alex Schmidt.
Katie, it is like, I feel like every time I'm on this podcast, it's very exciting. It's also going into a podcast, people are always like, I'm excited to be here. But like that intro, I'm very excited to know about all these things. This is great. I can't wait. Bear Blade Runner. Sure. Doesn't have to, be
Blade
the first
Runner.
Thing. Just very exciting.
I don't remember what the theme song to Blade Runner was. Was it like, Blade Runner, it's in the future?
Yes, Blade Runner had a standard like 30-second upbeat television theme song. That's part of
yeah,
Blade
Sting.
Runner. Yeah.
Played by Sting. It was weird. It was Sting. We're in the future. Robot people are here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Blade Runner.
Let me tell you a little story about a man named Blade. And then you just go from there. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we're going to talk about Bear Blade Runner. Because apparently, while we've been distracted with elections...
Ugh.
The world has been creating a Bear Blade Runner for bears, a bear new future. So in Japan, in Takikawa, they have built huge, terrifying wolf robots with glowing red eyes that are being used to scare bears.
Okay, so it's Bear Blade Runner because the bears are being hunted down like the robots were hunted down in Blade Runner. It's not bears doing the hunting.
I didn't think that through. Honestly, Alex, I didn't think it through that far. I just saw a robot. I saw it had to do with bears. I was like, bears and a wolf robot. This is Bear Blade Runner.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I think if I remember right, no one cares. But if I remember right, the Blade Runners are the hunters, which in the movie, then it's the question of is he a robot or not. But if I remember, the Blade Runner is the hunter hunting the robots. So a Bear Blade Runner would be somebody hunting bears. That makes sense. Yeah.
Right. But these wolf robots, I do not think would pass the Turing test or whatever is the test they use in the movie where they're like, what would you do to a turtle? Like they ask the robots, hey, are you a robot? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, would you, if you found a turtle on its back in the desert, what would you do? And they're like, I'm a robot. I don't know what I would do. But these are not very, I wouldn't say convincing wolf robots, but terrifying. They look like Halloween decorations. In fact, I feel like they may have been made out of parts of Halloween decorations. But they have glowing red eyes. They move around and kind of gyrate around. They have weird robot legs that just kind of like sort of stops looking like a wolf at one point and looks like a metal stick figure. Anyways, but yeah, it's got like a fake rubber wolf head, and then it makes terrifying noises as well. Let me play some of these for you.
Oh, amazing.
Oh. Oh.
So, yeah, it's, you know, kind of, I think part of that was wolf noises, and then it sounded a bit like birds. I'm not really sure.
It really escalated. It initially sounded like standard horror movie sound effects from maybe...
Like, ooh, and then it was like...
Right. It's like if... You know how there's a human will turn into a werewolf wolf? And then they like start to make more wolfy noises. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know how that is, for sure. Yeah. So they make the noises, they flash, the head turns around, and this is to scare bears, which I can imagine it would scare bears. You have a possessed devil robot wolf making horrible sounds.
Yeah.
Poor bears, they have been encroaching on human populated areas recently, and I say encroaching with a bit of irony, because of course humans are the ones that have been encroaching on the bears' territory. And the reason that they have had more interactions with humans, there have actually been more bear attacks in this region, which is very serious.
Yeah.
But this has been due to the fact that there is a shortage of acorns that the black bears in the region in Japan use to supplement their diet. And because of deforestation and human developments kind of getting closer and closer to the bear's habitat and taking up more of it, it makes these bears desperate for food and come into the human populated area. And so in order to reduce the number of bear attacks, the city has deployed these wolf robots to scare them away. And I get it. I think it's important. You don't want bear attacks at all, obviously, for humans and also for the bears. Because when you have a bear attack, often you have to actually put down the bear itself. So keeping them away from human populated areas, even if it is with freaking Terminator wolf over here, I think makes sense. On the other hand, I think it is just a band-aid on the bigger issue, which is that they need more food and acorns and territory. Otherwise, they're going to keep, you know, at a certain point, I feel like they'll become desensitized to the wolf robot and just start coming into human areas anyways if their food problem is not solved. So,
I you were very nice to send a picture as well. And between the picture and the sound, I feel like this is trying to solve the problem both ways, where you scare bears out of the region and you scare humans out of the region. Like, there's no bear attack if there's no people to get attacked, right? Fixed.
Right, exactly.
Done. Knocked it out.
This belongs to the robot wolves now.
Right.
Are we sure? Like, whoever's selling these robot wolves, I imagine, like, coming in the wolf robot wolf truck, like, they have sort of a human costume on. They're like, we come bearing robot wolves for your small village to scare the bears. Oh,
that's another thing we need to be concerned about, is anyone selling human costumes. There is never a good scenario where a being is like, I would like one human costume. It's only to deceive us. It's only, we need to stop manufacturing them in our huge human costume factories.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're being a little paranoid, Alex. It's not like a flock of super intelligent birds would use a human costume to do a podcast. Anyways, Facial recognition of bears.
Katie, did a feather just fall out of your eye? That was weird.
No. Okay. No, that was normal perspiration. Anyways, step two in Bear Blade Runner is facial recognition of bears. Poor bears. Bears are just having technology thrown at them, and I don't know how they're going to deal with it. So, Silicon Valley software developers are making bear facial recognition along with bear researchers in Canada. And the project is called Bear ID, which I feel like you could be a little more inventive with your evil seeming bear facial recognition software. Like
Barefaced is right there. It's
Barefaced?
Just,
oh, that's right.
It's
that's
so
a good
available.
One.
Come on.
Purportedly, this technology is being used for bear conservation studies to be able to track individual bears. So to figure out how to make this software, it's kind of an interesting path these software developers took. They took cues from a program called Dog Hipsterizer, which can find dogs' faces, eyes, and snouts in photos and puts little mustaches and glasses on them.
Yeah, we all know that app from its recent Nobel Prize win. I mean, it's pretty common scientific achievement in the news.
It has absolutely. It's an absolute disruptor in the dog face app tech industry. Yeah, and so they're like, oh, how do we, you know, we've got facial recognition for humans, but now we need it for bears so the government can track the bears and the IRS can hunt them down or whatever. Yeah, I love that they're like, huh, well, these app developers already did it with their technology to put glasses, hipster glasses on dogs to make your chihuahua look like a hipster. So we'll just use what they did but put it on bears for science research. So, you know, my opinion on this news is if this is used for conservation, which they are claiming it is, this is great because then you can use it to ID individual bears and track them. You don't have to collect them, tranquilize them and tag them or anything or, you know, try to spot them by visual differences. That can be hard to do as a researcher. And so that would mean a lot for conservation, especially if they can adapt this technology to other animals. But if we're going to be in a bear surveillance state where the government is tracking down rogue bears, I don't know. I can't support it.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch out for Bear Brother, another name they could have used for this software. That's there's so many out there. Work harder at this element, scientists. Please.
Be better. Bear better.
Bear best. Yeah,
bear best
behavior.
Yeah.
All these pictures are amazing, but if this is a mock-up of how it works, I feel like they didn't try that hard. Like it's just
right. It's
a picture of a bear, and then there's a red square around the bear's whole head, and then there's just a triangle where the three points are its eyes and its nose point. Like that doesn't seem like it's trying that hard to identify them.
I get what it's doing. It's like saying, like, here's the bear face. We've spotted the bear face, and then this is how far its eyes are from its snout, I guess, kind of like detecting very small differences in individuals. But it does look very simplistic, doesn't it? Like, well, here's the bear head, which is vaguely square shaped, and then its nose, triangle. I'm a smart computer. This is bear. Bears are just triangles and squares when you think about it.
What if the software really just tells you whether something is a bear or not? Like it can't distinguish between bears.
Right, right. It's you
green for bear, red for not bear, and that's it.
Right. You point it at like a blue jay, it's like not bear. You point it at a coyote, not bear, and then you point it out a bear, and it's like that's a bear, and then you know that's a bear. You would also know it's a bear if, like, the bear is already charging at you and then gets your whole face in its mouth and the program's going like, yep, definitely bear.
Right. And also, I feel like in every Silicon Valley story, it's that. And then the next line is, the company was valued at $10 trillion. They always expect this to change the world.
There's big bucks in bear surveillance. Yeah. I do hope also because they got the technology from Dog Hipsterizer that we will be able to put hats and little glasses and little mustaches on bears. I'm just saying, the technology is already there.
A whimsical bear surveillance state.
Right.
Perfect.
Right. How do you do? It's me, Mr. Bear.
2 + 2 = 5. Ha ha ha. Like, it's nice within the totalitarian element.
Right, right, right. Freedom is freedom is bears. Bear, big. Wait, what? 1980 bear. I don't know. Look,
1980 bear. That's another name. Bear. There we go.
That's it. That's the name of this thing. Yeah, exactly. A bear new world. Yep. No, it's good. We're gonna be, I guess, turning bears into soldiers. I don't know. I'm guessing we're gonna scare them with the. With the wolf robots, be able to track them down. And then I guess the next step is to convince them that in order to fight the robot wolf scourge, they must join the U.S. military.
Well, we were warned, you know, like as soon as the election's over, they're going to implement these bear policies and we have to be vigilant. Right. And now we're here, you know.
The bear army. Yeah. You know, so just keep your eyes open for... a bear army that is waging war on robot wolves.
In other bear news, a bear in Kings Beach, California, raided a convenience store for snacks. The bear ate a bunch of candy bars before being chased out and slapped on the butt by the owner. But before you judge this bear, you should know that the bear was recovering from a leg injury and just wanted to have a few Snickers, for God's sake. The bear was captured by wildlife officials and relocated, which barely seems fair. When we return, we're going to discuss some more suspicious species in the news.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Human politicians often seem to fail us, so why not a different kind of political animal? Apparently, the idea of voting for an animal as an elected official has been quite popular. In 1922, Yo-Yo the Billy Goat was elected to be city councilor of Fortaleza, Ceará, Brazil in 1938. Curtis the Mule was unanimously elected for a Republican precinct seat in Milton, Washington. Bosco the Dog was elected mayor of Sunol, California in 1981. In 1997, a cat named Stubbs was elected honorary mayor of Talkeetna, Alaska. And in 2019, Lincoln the Goat won his election for mayor of Fairhaven, Vermont, defeating Sammy the Samoyed Dog by 2 votes. I hope Sammy demanded a recount. But sometimes voting for animals goes beyond symbolism and has real policy and environmental implications. So, Alex, you know, I feel like people have probably been paying attention to the election and stuff, but I think people have missed perhaps the most important election result of all time.
Oh.
And that is in Colorado, wolves got voted in. They got voted in, Alex. The wolves got voted into Colorado.
Like voted into existing in the state or being in the legislature?
Yes.
Or, oh, the first one.
They got voted into Colorado.
Yeah.
Congratulations, they won the election, and now they get to be in Colorado. This is literally actually what it was. So there was a proposition in Colorado to reintroduce gray wolves to the Southern Rockies. So gray wolves, which are basically, you know, gray wolves are the standard wolf. They are basically all the wolves in the world, and they have been hunted to extinction in the area.
Yeah.
There have been no wolves in the Southern Rockies since the 1940s. And the people of Colorado voted, and they voted to bring back the gray wolf and to reintroduce them to the area, which conservationists have said that the Southern Rocky Mountain area has capacity for hundreds of wolves to thrive.
Right. Before the fire marshal kicks them out. If you go over that, fire marshal says, out of here.
All right. All right. All right. Shut it all down, the wolf rave. They got the robot wolf playing Skrillex, just pumping out sick beats. Yeah. It's interesting because it was narrowly passed. It did not passed by a landslide. There, the wolves have not gotten a mandate, unfortunately.
Wolf supermajority. Yeah, there we go.
The opponents worry that the wolves will reduce the elk population. Ranchers are worried that the wolves will attack their cattle. Mm. In terms of them reducing the elk population, I don't think that's really that much of a concern in my personal non-elk expert opinion because, well, in general, like, wolves and predator animals can actually be really good for prey animal populations. Like, when they when you have a good balance of prey to predator, the predators actually keep the prey from dangers like overpopulation, mass starvation, and disease. So I feel like, if anything, introducing the wolves might actually be good for the elk population. I guess it all depends on the balance, like the number of wolves to elk and how things have changed since they went extinct from the area. Because obviously when you have an animal, one of the tricky things with reintroducing them is if the environment and balance of things have changed since they disappeared from the area and then you suddenly reintroduce them, there can be some issues. But I think that, you know, we've done a lot of successful reintroduction of species that I think conservationists are well aware of all those issues and will probably be pretty careful about that. And they're not just like dumping hundreds of wolves all at once. Like, they're saying this is going to take years to like slowly build up to.
Yeah. And they haven't been there since the 1940s. You said that's amazing.
Yeah.
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 What a comeback. And for what it is, you know, great.
And like, a bit of evidence for the wolves actually being good for potentially good for the elk population is that in another area in Yellowstone, the wolf population may be saving the deer population from a deadly brain disease called chronic wasting disease.
Oh, I've heard of this.
By picking off the deer that have the disease and preventing it from spreading, the wolves are actually saving the deer population from this disease. So, like, the disease can spread from deer to deer. I don't think it can spread to wolves yet, but it is a concern. Like, whenever you have a zoonotic disease, that it could jump from deer to other species
including humans. So the wolves are heroes. They're hero doctor wolves.
Well, you probably know more about it than me, but am I overdoing it if I say the chronic wasting disease is sort of like zombieism in pop culture? That's what I've heard it compared to.
Yeah, I think because it does attack the brain, it is a little bit concerning. I don't know that these deer are eating other deer brains necessarily.
Right.
Or like stomping around on their hind hooves, like with their front legs kind of sticking out and going like brains.
Right. At a tattered shirt from their old profession and everything, right?
Right, yeah. right. Bunch of like football players and right. tattered.
And like, oh, a priest. How ironic that they are now right. a flesh eater. That is really a commentary on society.
Someone in a hazmat suit. Now, how did that deer in the hazmat suit get the zombieism? Because you'd think,
right.
but no.
I, the main character, am frowning at this new development. Yeah, sure.
But yeah, it is. So like, this is a really good example of how predators can actually be good in general for a prey population. Obviously, it sucks for whatever deer they end up eating. But like, if you have deer that have the chronic wasting disease and the wolves kill them and eat them, it prevents it from spreading. And, you know, if anything, like it probably marginally sucks less to get eaten by a wolf than to die of chronic wasting disease. I don't actually know.
Right.
I'm going to say maybe. I would potentially prefer to get eaten by a wolf than go out by chronic wasting disease.
Yeah, if you're a deer, write into Creature Feature Podcast at 123 Main Street, Anytown, USA, and let us know what your what your preference would
be. Yeah, call into the show at 1-800-DEATH-BY-WOLVES. So, it shows the importance of predator-prey balance in nature and also the importance to humans. Like, if this chronic wasting disease, God forbid, mutates and is able to jump from deer to human, that is really bad. That could be another, like, you know, I don't want to scare people. This is all very low probability. It's just like whenever you have a disease or a virus and you give it time to mutate and evolve, like, you're rolling the die over and over again for it to be able to jump from one animal to another. And so you just by reducing the chance that happens, you reduce the chance of it, you know, spreading to humans and potentially being a disease that humans have to deal with. So, thank you, wolves. Hero doctors.
Yeah. And I wish I knew more about wolf conservation in general. It seems really cool.
Yeah.
I used to work at Brookfield Zoo as a tour guide, and we had Mexican gray wolves on exhibit. And because that was, I guess, because the Mexican population of gray wolves is distinct and was way, way down. So they were trying to conserve them, bring them back. But so easy for people to be like, predator, fire, you know, and then we got to save them too. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's really important to remember that once an animal is taken out of the game, like I kind of use this metaphor a lot where, you know, the environment is sort of like a game of Jenga, and you take out an animal you don't know.
The famously stable Jenga. Oh, no.
Right. You don't know. Like, once you take out one animal, you don't know which one is going to, like, mess up the tower of Jenga. And the more animals you take out, the more unstable it becomes. So, yeah, obviously, I don't know some of the ins and outs of reintroducing these wolves, but I think it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
And you can sue me if it turns out not to be a good idea.
Send your subpoena or whatever to Creature Pod, 123
Main Street, 1-800-USA. 1-800-DEATH-BY-WOLF. But if you want to talk about introducing a species that is not a good idea, let's talk about the giant murder hornets that everyone is all abuzz about.
I'm so pleased to be back for more murder hornet news. I believe my most recent appearance was murder hornet news. This is very exciting.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, welcome back,
Alex,
to the Katie Alex podcast within the podcast. Murder hornet. Just dial MH for murder hornet. There it is.
A lot of touch tone stuff in this episode. I can't talk, but it's fun.
It's good. We're fine. Our brains are good and healthy and normal after the last few weeks.
Yeah.
So here's the difference between reintroducing like a species that used to be indigenous to an area and introducing a species that is an invasive species. So wolves are indigenous animals being reintroduced. They are suited for that environment, and their prey, the elk, probably still have a lot of the defense mechanisms that they had while the wolves were there in order to prevent them from just being all killed by the wolves. So you reintroduce the wolves. It's basically inserting them back in the balance. As long as things haven't changed too much since the wolves have been gone, shouldn't be too harsh of a transition. Meanwhile, when you have an invasive species like the giant murder hornets, so giant murder hornets are
bad, you say? No, just kidding. Yeah. giant murder hornets.
They're not like bad animals. So like the areas in which they are originally found, like in countries in Asia, the animals there have developed anti-predator defense mechanisms against the giant murder hornets. So the giant murder hornets are kept in check by a series of checks and balances. Damn it, I don't want to talk about politics anymore in this podcast. So they have been accidentally introduced into North America, which is really bad because our bees, both our native bees and our honeybees, which are not native, but they are like our domesticated population of bees, are both in danger from this invasive species of murder hornets because they just don't have any defensive. And the murder hornets are huge and they can decapitate a bunch of bees at an alarming rate. Master decapitators. So that's where we are with the murder hornets. But here's a murder hornet update. Maybe I'd do a sound effect here, or if maybe I'll probably be too lazy to do that. Should we do our own, like, let's do our own thing, like, wee woo, wee woo, wee woo. Murder hornet update.
What's the buzz? I'm trying to do like morning zoos good. Guy sounds.
No, you did it. murder hornet updates in the morning.
With Katie and the Spaz. I'm the Spaz now. That's my nickname on the show.
So in Blaine, Whatcom County, Washington State, entomologists have found the first murder hornet nest filled with queen murder hornets. So when you find them...
Just queens? Yeah.
No, not just queens, it had a bunch of queens in it.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry, it's not all... It's like, oops, all queens, murder hornet nest. No, there were workers in the nest as well. So the way that they do it is when they find a murder hornet, they don't just like kill it with fire like the people want them to. They actually trap it, put a radio tracker on it, and then revive them with a little bit of grape jelly.
Wait.
Which is my favorite part of it. Okay, yes.
So they knock them out, like with ether or something, like in a cartoon.
Well, yeah, or just like chill them. I'm not exactly sure how they knock them out, but yeah, they trap them, put a radio tracker on them, revive them with a little bit of grape jelly, which is kind of, and then like follow them back to the nest so that they can actually destroy the nest, because killing a worker murder hornet doesn't really get you anything if there's still a nest out there with queens, because the worker murder hornets are most likely, like 99% likely, not going to be reproducing, whereas the queens are the ones that are reproducing. And so
standard anti-mafia stuff, like, don't worry the foot soldiers.
Right, exactly. So, so you got to have them lead them back to their hideout. And
Queen Capone, throwing
in a little bit of grape jelly to kind of grease the wheels, keep them quiet. Hush jelly never hurt nobody, a little bit of hush jelly. So then they followed this murder hornet back to the nest, and indeed they found the nest, and it had, I think, several queens in it, and they destroyed it. So that's good,
nice,
because. Yeah, you don't want. We do not want the murder hornets to get a foothold in North America, because our native bee populations just wouldn't know how to handle it. You know, we could try to train them like Rocky, give them little tiny boxing gloves, but I don't know. That's There's a lot of bees, so that would be very time consuming.
Yeah, if I remember right, the Japanese honeybees would do some kind of thing where they surround and explode the murder hornets, which seems hard to teach. Like, you can't just like learn that in a school for bees.
Yeah. School for bees. So that'd be a fun show. But no. Yeah, you're completely correct. These Japanese honeybees will surround the invading murder hornets and then vibrate their bodies, heating them up such that the invading hornets will basically boil to death.
That's right, the boiling, yeah.
As they heat up the murder hornet with their little angry vibrating bodies. I think they also like drop the oxygen level in this big bee ball, so like they're suffocating and boiling the hornet to death, and they can pretty effectively defend their hive against hornets this way. And so but our bees don't know how to do that, so they're
right, we can't just do a training montage wherever we find a hive. Like, it's gonna be
it's like, vibrate, come on, you can do it, boy, vibrate. No, well, actually, they're all of these bees would be girls, because they are, well, females, because all the worker bees are females. So it'd be, come on, gals, you can do this. You just gotta vibrate harder.
There's no crying in defensive vibration, is the female sports movie, I guess.
Just like dump a gallon of Gatorade on them and all the bees die. Anyways. And then our last bit of suspicious species. This is actually great news, which is that two new species of greater glider have been discovered in Australia. So we have talked about greater gliders before. They are Australian marsupials. They are the largest gliding mammal in the world. They are about 17 inches long. That's about 43 centimeters. And they look like big teddy bears with long, fluffy tails and like a face that looks like a cross between a kitty cat and a mouse. They look made up. They look like a stuffed animal that like is made up from the imagination of Lisa Frank. They are just so fluffy, so incredible.
Like in the Neopet family of creature. Yeah.
Yes. Sure. Yeah, yes. Yeah. They look like a Neopet. Damn it! I forgot to feed my Neopets for the last 20 years. Oh no.
What if it's alive and just politely upset? Like, it's just looking at its watch in an armchair. Like, there you
tapping
are.
Tapping its little foot.
Mm. Makes you feel bad, you know?
Yeah, turns around, turns on the lamp. Hmm. Like, so.
I guess you've been busy.
Guess you've been busy for the past 20 years. Hmm. Yeah, so this is a real life Neopet. They have flaps at the sides of their bodies, skin flaps, that allow them to glide, much like a flying squirrel. But they are much bigger than a flying squirrel. And here is the cool news. Recently, it's been discovered that there are actually two other species of greater glider, when we originally thought there was only one species. So they look a little bit different, and they have been found to be genetically different as well. And I'll put this picture in the show notes, but you can see all three of these species. You have one that looks sort of gray with cute big old like cat mouse ears, and it's super fluffy. And you have another one that's sort of like a darker sort of ashy color, and with a little white belly as well, and big old mouse looking ears. And then a third one that's sort of a even darker color, kind of black. It looks scruffier, and it's got, you know, again, that cute little white belly. I've got to say, they're all adorable. That's my, that, you know, if I was cataloging these, I'd be like, that one's cute. This one's cute. Specimen 35A, also cute. Very cute.
As different as they are, they're all rated 13 out of 10. You know, they're all great.
Yeah, yeah.
To reference they're that all... dog Twitter. Yeah, it's just good. Really good.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to basically identify these when you're just going, oh, look at our little baby. Look at our little baby.
It's a zoomy baby. It's a flying baby.
Like the expert scientist has the trainee scientist, and they're like, now when you approach these, you need to be very like as soon as they see it. Like,
your baby has a big tail.
We have to be quiet as we approach the subject. Like,
and then it just screams and glides away. Yeah, it's a big problem. It's probably why we only are finding out there are three species as of now, because like scientists have just been blowing their cover too much. They can't even identify them.
Yeah, I remember, this is another thing I learned as a zoo tour guide. We had okapis, and okapis are from like Central Africa, like in deep rainforests there. And apparently, and
those are those like zebra giraffe hybrid looking things, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it, between their fantastical looks and how deep they were in the rainforest, a lot of Europeans thought they were mythical because they just couldn't track down a report of them. I feel like this is like that. Like, it was just so cute. Yes. The boss back at science headquarters was like, no, you're making this up. Forget it.
Right. Which has happened before, like with a platypus. They thought that was a hoax. They thought someone just glued spare parts all together to make the platypus. But actually, speaking of platypus, we have some exciting platypus news right after the break.
Oh, how will people tolerate the break? It's so exciting.
I don't know. They'll just like pee their pants. It's fine.
Speaking of Australia, they've just invited devils into their island. Tasmanian devils have been reintroduced to Australia's mainland, which they haven't stepped foot in for 3,000 years. Tasmanian devils have, in recent history, lived exclusively on Australia's Tasmania Island. By introducing them to the mainland, conservationists hope for two things: that the devils bring some balance to mainland Australia's ecosystem, and that their population numbers increase. Mainland Australia has suffered many blows to their native ecosystem. From cane toads to pet kitty cats, rare animals like bandicoots have been threatened. Tasmanian devils, pugnacious scavengers, may help ward off invasive species and act as ornery custodians of the ecosystem. And the increase in natural habitat for the Tasmanian devil may help their population grow, as they've suffered from a contagious facial cancer outbreak in Tasmania. Conservationists are hoping that the new colony of cancer-free devils in mainland Australia will have a better fighting chance. And they do love to fight, though they're no threat to humans. When we return, we're going to switch to the entertainment beat and talk about some breaking party animal news.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
So how have animals been partying while we've been distracted? If you miss partying during quarantine, why don't we take a peek to see some of the most festive, sexy, and remarkable animal news stories of the past few weeks? So now we are back with a platypus update.
Katie and the Spaz. We're still doing it. Still at it.
Near, 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 near. Platypus in the morning. Mono e monotreme. That's a joke because they're monotremes, which is a type of mammal who lays eggs and does not have nipples to lactate. Instead, they actually ooze milk out of their bellies. And that's what a mono... They're called monotreme because they have a cloaca. And monotreme means one hole. Mono e monotreme in the morning. So yes, platypus news is that platypuses are biofluorescent and glow blue under UV light.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yes, I actually think I had a listener ask me, I'm so sorry, I don't remember what your Twitter handle is, but a listener did ask me if this was true, and I am happy to report that yes, it is true.
It was probably a young platypus figuring out its own body, and I'm glad we can guide them on this journey, you know? Like, all mature.
I'm noticing some changes.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Is this normal?
I also have huge braces, even though I don't have teeth. And I'm trying to figure out why.
It's very weird to have a retainer in my bill, but you know. So biofluorescence happens when a living organism is able to absorb and re-emit light. So typically this is only visible to humans under UV black light, but other animals can actually see biofluorescence.
Oh.
Coral, scorpions, fungi, and other living creatures all biofluoresce. So... There is a lot of biofluorescence in a variety of organisms, but this we did not know about until recently. And it really was just researchers going like, you know what? I wonder if platypuses glow under UV light and trying it out. Cause like, you know, it's not like we test every animal to see if they biofluoresce, but flying squirrels have a little bit of biofluorescence. So some researchers were like, you know, I wonder if platypuses do that. Let's try platypuses. Why not? They're weird.
I'm imagining the boss of Australian science, right? They're working from home. They're juggling
Mr.
children
science.
And cooking Thanks. And everything. And then they're getting all these reports of gliders and luminescent platypuses and everything. Like, they got to be pulling their hair out, all this stuff.
Right.
Chaos.
Right. Gosh darn TikTok teens trying to prank me. Yeah, so researchers aren't sure why this happens, but sure enough, under UV light or black light, their fur glows a beautiful bright blue. And again, we're not sure why this happens. This is a very recent discovery. Maybe it's a form of camouflage? Question mark?
In this like scan or whatever, it almost looks like a blue-footed booby in a weird way.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
fun to me.
The little paddles, the little front webbed feet look... They also seem to be fluorescing, which is interesting. But yeah, it does look a little bit like a blue-footed booby, which I must say is a bird. It's a bird, and it's got blue feet. And it's called a blue-footed booby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know if I guess not everybody knows
just,
that.
Yeah, we just like to name birds naughty things like tits and boobies. Scientists. I guess like ornithologists are just kind of horny on Maine, but, you know, there you go. Speaking of ornithologists being horny on Maine,
Let's talk about a bird that was discovered that is half male, half female in a spectacular way.
Exciting.
So in Pennsylvania, a rose-breasted grosbeak, again with the breasts, you guys, just take it down a notch, birders. All right, so a rose-breasted grosbeak was discovered that is half male, half female, literally split down the middle. One side of it is male and the other side is female.
Oh.
So grosbeaks are small birds with sturdy beaks for cracking open seeds. They look very finch-like. They come in many colors and they are often sexually dimorphic, meaning that the females and males differ in physical appearance and color and size.
Yeah.
In this case, the rose-breasted grosbeak that was discovered is a very rare bilateral gynandromorph, meaning that one side of its body is female and the other is male, split laterally from head to tail. So
yeah.
I think in this case, the right side is male and the left side is female.
And this picture is amazing because, like, yeah. I don't know a ton about birds. You know more, and you are birds. But
I am birds.
But as I understand it, like, it's very common for bird male and female of a species to look different. But it's almost always symmetrical within the bird, you know? And then this picture of a bird, yes. It has a red wing and it has like a golden yellow wing. And that, yes. Must be because of the split. That's fascinating.
Yes, exactly. So the red wing is the male side.
Wow.
Males have red coloration. And that wing is actually a little bit longer than the yellow wing, which is the female side, which is a little shorter.
Man.
Which is also, like, females have slightly shorter wings, which I hope this poor bird isn't, like, flying around in circles because of that. But so this is extremely rare. This is like winning the bird lottery, like literally one in a million chance to find one of these incredible birds. So
yeah.
Although this is not the only bird that's ever been discovered, there have been other birds. This has also been recorded in butterflies, crustaceans, spiders, and other insects, snakes, and particularly, I think zebra finches, for whatever reason, have it happen to them a lot. It's been found in chickens as well, cardinals. This is caused by an unusual event during a bird's embryonic development when the cells are splitting during a fertilized egg's development, where one of the dividing cells does not split the sex chromosomes as it normally would. Yeah, so it literally develops where one side of the bird is physically female, and then the other side is physically male. And this can be both external characteristics, like the coloration and size, as we see in this bird. It can also be internal anatomy, so sex organs, like you may have ovaries only on one side. So it is absolutely fascinating. One thing is that, like, I feel like there are a lot of prudes that like to reference nature when it comes to, like, human gender expression, and they're like, oh, well, that's unnatural. It's like, dude, you don't know anything about nature. Nature is incredibly fun and free.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, you can't, you know, identify as another gender. That's unnatural. It's like, no, nature wrote the book on this stuff, you guys. Like, yeah, it always frustrates me when people are like, well, you know, biology says you can't be, you know, different as a human. It's like, no, it actually does. It's actually, your biology is incredibly creative and fun. And so, you know, you don't.
Yeah.
it's frustrating. Also, can I just say, this bird, absolutely beautiful. Like, it's just, I mean, there's
it's
something
really cool.
About, like, I guess because we're so used to symmetry in animals, seeing an animal where it's like one side is red and the other side is yellow, it's just incredible looking.
Yeah, now I just want to see all the animals like this. Like, you said a cardinal was found like this? I don't know if it was the past and they didn't take
where it's
a picture,
like one,
but
yeah,
sounds great.
Yeah, one side is reddish coloration, so the other side is sort of a lighter coloration, like a female. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. Also important to note that this is different from hermaphroditism, where, so in that case, it's not like bilateral asymmetry. So, like, you can have a mixture of male and female second sexual characteristics. and organs. And that is actually a lot more common than this. This is just very uncommon because it's the particular arrangement of having like literally like one half, one side of the animal is male, the other half is female, is just very, very rare, very interesting. So yeah, there are a lot of different types of situations where an animal will have both male and female parts. And sometimes it's not even like unusual. Like there are species of animals that are always hermaphroditic, always have both male and female parts. This just happens to be a species where this is not typical. And it's also especially interesting because it's, again, that whole like, you know, one half, half and half, split yeah. right down the middle.
Yeah. Also good job, humans, noticing this, tracking it down. I feel like yes. I don't see, I'm not a birder, but I never see birds that clearly in the wild or walking around the neighborhood. So good job. Well done.
I mean, there's probably, yes, it is. That is an incredible find. Also, it's probably, there are probably more of these bilateral gynandromorphs than we know, because some birds are not quite as obvious with the sexual dimorphism. So spotting the males and females look more similar. So being able to find ones that have this, like, you just wouldn't know looking at them. It would be very subtle. So yeah, it's really interesting. And I just want to end the show with a little bit of bat news. And I feel like this, we've actually talked about this bat before on the show, I think actually almost exactly a year ago. And
it's our bat-iversary of talking about it.
It's our bat-iversary. Happy bat-iversary, there we everybody. Go. Yes, thank you. But now I think it's relevant to bring this up again. First of all, they're in the news, and also it's very applicable to us humans. So these are wrinkle-faced bats. They are found in Central America. They have a very, very wrinkly face. It just, I don't know, like, how would you describe this face? Like a walnut? Looks a little bit like a walnut.
Yeah, it's like if a walnut was made of knuckles.
And then that's a good description. I like that.
And then the overall shape of like that Sumerian dog monster from Ghostbusters, like the two of them form, like they activate the thing. Yeah.
I think it's cute.
And it's cute. Yes. I should clarify that I mean that is cute.
It's like if you put like Stitch in the washing machine, but then you didn't like fold him. So then he got all wrinkly.
I saw that movie for the first time last month. I finally caught up with it. It's very fun.
Oh my
very
God.
Very special.
It's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
I love Lilo and Stitch. It's amazing. Yeah, one of the best movies. So they have mouth pouches to store food in. They eat fruit. They have one of the strongest bites per their size compared to other bats because this allows them to eat tough fruit, get through the tough skin of fruit. And most importantly, they have a little chin flap that they can use as a mask. That they literally pull up over their face as a mask, as we should all be doing right now. Hero bats. So,
God, I just imagined a Republican wrinkle-faced bat that's like, sure, I have a chin-based flap that's a mask, but I'm not going to wear it. Like, just the laziest, worst bat. Anyway.
Well, bad news for that bat, because the lady bats love a mask. Female bats find these masks sexy, which, look, speaking as a female human, I say all masks are sexy. And wearing them instantly improves your standing in my mind. I'm like, that person cares about other people. That's respectable.
Right.
Caring is sexy. So
it is literally signaling your virtue. Like you're a virtuous person who bothers to care about people. And that's good.
Right. Right. Exactly. So these masks are sexy for female birds, and the males will use them to attract mates. Bernal Rodriguez Herrera, who is a bat biologist at the University of Costa Rica, calls the male masked seducers, which I love. I would like to adopt that for humans. Like you wear a mask, you're a masked seducer. They will literally flex their little face masks like they're flexing their muscles. They will lift it over their face and like pull it with their little arms like, eh? Eh? You like what you see? And that drives the lady bats wild with desire. And one of the theories is that the mask may help them modulate their mating calls because they seem to always chirp while the mask is up. So maybe it gives the mating call some interesting kind of resonance. Another theory is that because the skin flap is white, it might help the females locate the males visually. And so you're sort of almost flashing a beacon at the females like, hey, look at me. I'm an eligible bachelor who cares about public health and safety. Also, the little masks are furry, so they kind of look like Santa beards, which I think is cute.
Oh, man. Well, and we're in the era of Kurt Russell being sexy Santa. So that's understood now. People get it.
Oh, wait. I just had an idea. Why don't people put fake beards over their masks so you can look like Santa?
Yeah.
Santa masks.
Yeah.
What? Why haven't we done this?
I remember, I think it was around August, I was just walking and I had a realization that the mask would feel warm in the winter. Like, I got excited for now.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah. That's going to be good. So, yeah,
I'm
add that on.
I'm always getting, like,
make it seasonal.
Yeah, I'm always getting runny noses and stuff. And, like, I've been noticing, like, hey, you know what? My hot breath is heating up my nose. It feels good.
Yeah.
So, again, I think we can learn a lot from these bats, that they love masks. The ladies love them. And yeah, I mean, for humans, obviously, everyone of good caliber loves a mask. And I just think that it is great to wear them.
Yeah, me too. Like, keep it up, folks. It's spiking.
Yeah. I'm sure that I feel like all of our listeners are probably on board with the whole mask wearing thing, but I want to give you hope. I want to give you some cheer that, like, the bats are on board with us and they'll think you're cute if you wear a mask. Bats are going to think you're cute.
And that is, I'm sure you're right. And every listener to this show is, like, on top of masks. Like, prior to the election, I realized as I was taping A Secretly Incredibly Fascinating, I was like, I would tell you guys to vote, but you're great. Like, if you can vote, I'm sure you did. Good job. Like, this space, we don't need to do it. You're at it.
I just think it'll help with the monotony of wearing a mask every day. Know that bats will think you're cute for wearing the mask. And, you know, you might get noticed by Bat Senpai. So that's good.
Yeah, bat society is really interesting to me. I love it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, they have romance novels with a heavily masked bat on the cover. Like, wow, look at that mask. You'd never see that in real life.
Yes. So if you want to attract a bat, wear a mask. Well, specifically the wrinkle-faced bats. But yeah. Who wouldn't want to attract a wrinkle-faced bat? They are, hoo boy, you know?
Again, a handsome knuckle walnut that you want to get to know.
A handsome walnut. I want to get to know this handsome walnut. Well, Alex, I think that's going to do it for today. I think we've covered all of the news stories that people may have missed during, you know, the recent weeks. I guess other stuff was going on that was important. But yeah, now we're caught up on the animal news.
There's so much going on. And I'm sure, like you said, it all happened when I was distracted with other things. And it's so exciting to know about. Again, the bear and wolf stuff alone. Remember that, folks? Holy cow.
Blade Runner bears.
Yeah.
So Alex, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you about animal news.
Buddy, same.
So where can the people and the bats and the robot wolves find you? Because they will.
I'm on Morning Drive Time with Katie Golden on Katie and the Spaz every week. I host a show called Secretly Incredibly Fascinating. It's a podcast I'm really proud of. It's about the history and science and lore that make ordinary things secretly incredibly fascinating. And it's had wonderful guests like Katie Golden, who's on the second ever episode and did a lot to help, like, get it going at all. So I really appreciate that a whole lot.
We talked about moo cows.
Yeah, and the episode's about cattle. So, you know, animals for you. Yeah.
Yeah. You can find us on the internet at Creature Feature Pod on Instagram, at Creature Feet Pod on Twitter. That's F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. That was something very different. You can find me at Katie Golden online. That's K-A-T-I-E-G-O-L-D-I-N. I usually post Katie thoughts. Look, a lot of my tweets are going to be political because, you know, politics is important. But, you know, here on the podcast, it's animals time. As always, I'm also at Pro Bird Rights. Where I am definitely just a normal human talking about birds. It's fine. It's pretend birds, not real birds. I'm certainly not a bunch of real birds in a human suit. That would be weird, and I'm not that.
I'm also really impressed how much seed you can eat without the mic picking it up. You know, like usually during a taping.
Doc, this is happening.
I'm also really impressed how much bird seed you can eat during a taping without the mic picking it up. Usually snacking, it really gets in there, but you do a good job.
Like, it keeps me regular. It's good fiber.
Yeah. I don't know why there's a big handwritten note that says human seed over the label of whatever that really is. That's interesting.
Well, it's good to label products as they accurately are.
Anyways,
if you have any questions for the podcast, you can email me. I mean, obviously, you can message me on any of those social media platforms, but if you prefer the old email, you can do creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com. And also send me pictures of your pets. I love that. I like that. Or birds. As normal humans like to see birds. Thanks so much to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or, hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows. See you next Wednesday.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.